as they got older, we were really intentional about teaching them what the tools were for, how you use them.
I know we bought like the little play tool set. And so they have their little drill and sit there going yee into whatever project I was working on. They'd work with me and I enjoyed that.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Former. Empowering you to transform your life. One imperfect day at a time.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I am your host, Anna Fulmer. Today is a super fun episode. My husband, Zach, and I are answering your questions that you submitted about our fixer-upper journey for the last 10 years. In case you do not know our story, Zach and I have been renovating the homes that we lived in. It started as a side hustle. It became a huge part of our story and our family life. Over the last 10 years, we have renovated all three homes that we lived in, made a significant profit on all three. And we are sharing details of the numbers, the nitty-gritty details that people don't like to talk about, how we managed finances. Did we do it well? The answer is no, not initially. We share our mistakes, things that hopefully will help you not make the same mistake, but also encourage you that mistakes happen. You learn from them, right? Failures can all be turned into lessons learned. We share all those details, what we did with the profit on each house, what we put into them, how we maximized that money in and money out, things that we would have done differently, some actual renovation mistakes, how we renovated with kids. We actually gave life to and raised several children in these processes as well. We share so much more, including an uplifting word of encouragement, supernatural story that happened that led us to the rental house that we are currently in as we wait for our dream property and kind of see all this work come to fruition. If you need a little bit of encouragement, divine inspiration that the impossible is possible with a divine creator who cares about your story, all the details of it, and wants to be involved in your life and make himself known, hang tight to the end because I share a story that's near and dear to my heart, what it meant to me, to my kids, to us, and why we are ultimately here today because of it. Meet my husband, Zach, though. This is the first time Zach has been on the podcast. Hello.
Hey, Anna. It's kind of exciting to finally be on it.
I know. His buddies were just here for the weekend and they were making fun of me. What'd Brandon say? His favorite part is when I start slaming you on the podcast.
Yeah, Tim said he just looks forward to making fun of me. Yeah. Telling me to get my act together.
Yeah, get off your butt. Well, the one thing that my husband is not is lazy, as you will very quickly figure out during this conversation. So for everyone listening and watching, what we did is I had followers and listeners submit questions. What do you want to know about our fixer-upper journey? For those of you who are not aware of it in like a super speed version, the bottom line is over the last 10 years, we have renovated three homes as a side hustle. To be clear, this was not our job. We were not fixer-upper influencers, if you will. That was not what we did for a living. For those of you that don't know, Zach is a computer programming teacher and also a football coach. He's my nerdy jock. And I, for 10 years, worked in the emergency department, was a nurse practitioner. I have now stepped away from bedside medicine and doing this blogging, virtual coaching, and podcasting world full time, which I love. But for 10 years, we renovated the homes that we lived in. And we're going to talk about that. And we did it with kids and all the things. And basically got to where we are today, which is now in a rental home, waiting to find our dream property to build our forever home. So that is what instigated where we're at right now. We're finally, really finally at the finish line, I would argue. Light is at the end of the tunnel. So this episode is all about our fixer-upper adventures and answering your questions that you submitted. And the first one was simply, how did you get started? Where did it even begin? How did you get into this world? Zach, you want to take that one?
It started when we were moving back home after our daughter was born. We'd finished master's degrees at Hopkins and we were looking for a place to live.
and a lot of the things that were in our price range needed work. We happened upon one that needed a little bit more work than I think we anticipated, but the Victorian, the first house, but we enjoyed doing it, and you had a talent for it.
Well, enjoyed is a strong word for that first house.
I'm trying to make it sound good.
It is a strong word. So he's right. That was basically, I like to say we were energy rich, but cash poor. So the bottom line is when we got back from Baltimore, we moved back. Gracie was like 11 months old. And we decided that a good investment to try our hand at was a home. It just seemed like a good use of what little money we did have. And to be clear, people, you know, always have questions about the financial aspect and they're scared to ask because for whatever reason, people get real uptight talking about money. In my world, so you know, for the duration of this episode, I see money as a vehicle, not a destination. It's just a tool. It's not the end goal. It's never the end goal, at least not in my mind. And so I am going to share some of the nitty-gritty details of the finances because this is an essential piece to stuff like this, and nobody talks about it. No one shares with you like the messy backstory and how you got to where you are. So I am totally open to talking about that. I wish somebody had talked to me about it really 10 years ago. So to be clear, to even buy this house, again, I had paid my way through my second master's. Zach had very little debt, but we did not have 20% down for our first house. So we had a very generous loan, if you will, from family members. And the idea is we were able to then set up an 8-year payment plan and we paid them back over 8 years with interest. So it was, you know, making money for them, but it also enabled us to make our first investment on our home. So that is how realistically we even got our first home, our very first fixer-upper. It was an old Victorian. That is how we got started. Why did we keep going? The simple answer is that when we sold that Victorian 2 years later, we took home a nice paycheck. And we were like, you know what? Enjoy again is a very strong word. That first house could have been a deal breaker in marriage for a lot of couples. It very nearly was probably for us.
We learned a lot. We learned a lot about each other.
A lot. One of the next questions was, you usually live in the flip for a few years before selling. So to tie all this together, each of our homes we did live in for 2 to 3 years, because if you buy a house, renovate it, and then resell it for more, you will pay capital gains tax on the profit if it's less than 2 years. So we lived in these for 2 to 3 years prior to reselling in order to avoid capital gains. That's basically a much higher percentage that you would pay on that profit because it's basically income. It's like a paycheck to yourself.
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
We lived in construction zones for a long time.
I mean, construction zones. Now, again, to be specific, with the degree of construction that we did in a lot of these houses, the first two, we actually moved in with my parents for several months. We've literally lived with my parents in and out so many times. Would they have ever guessed when I graduated from high school that I would be moving back in with them with my family several times? Caleb was conceived in my bedroom. # real talk TMI. How uncomfortable are you now, babe?
I didn't know it was that kind of podcast.
It is that. This episode is. Like, I'm telling you, who would have guessed? Let's just put it that way. And my mom's going to now like decontaminate my old bedroom. Maybe my dad will. Anyway, the bottom line is we moved back in with them several times we gutted, like the third one we stayed in our second house while we were doing some of the renovations and did a bridge loan. But for the first two, we totally gutted them. So we had to live somewhere else before we could actually start One of the other questions was, how much did you save up before starting your first flip? I kind of answered that. We had next to nothing saved up, and then we used our income to actually do the renovations. And this is where we learned a lot. We did not manage the finances well, especially with that first one. Part of it is I primarily did the finances for us. That was just, I don't know how we landed in that or why I primarily did them. But I grew up in a very financially responsible home. I was never necessarily given like financial planning type of principles. And again, in my mind, money is a vehicle, not a destination. So I was like, yeah, I'll put this on the credit card. Like, I'll pay it off eventually. I'm not worried about it. Like, we'll make money on this down the road. And so I didn't have quite the respect for debt that I should have. We were in credit card debt pretty much the entire time we lived at that first house. Wouldn't you say? I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, for a lot of it.
I think for the majority, for the majority of the time, I had a balance on our credit card. And this was due to several things. One, I did see it as an investment. It didn't scare me like it probably should have to have credit card debt. I was like, oh, when we sell it, like, we'll make money. I'm not worried about this interest. We did make money, but I should have had a healthier respect probably for the debt aspect. Part of it was I was impatient. I struggled with being able to live in the mess. I wanted a project done. This was really hard for me. People like don't, it's so easy when you're on social media and people see like what you're currently doing to be like, how does she like deal with that? She just must be so, you know, okay with like dust everywhere and mess everywhere. Where I am today is not where I was 10 years ago. Like Zach can testify.
Agree with that. I will very much agree with that. There were some, nights at the Victorian where I was up still sanding drywall at 2 o'clock in the morning, having to teach school the next day and thinking about how much I love my wife.
I love my wife. I love my wife. I do love my wife.
That project just had to get done.
Yeah. Like and some of it was like, I probably legit have a little degree of OCD. Clinically, I've never been diagnosed, but it's certainly never been incapacitating, but definitely like a degree of anxiety feeling like this project has to get completed. It just needs to be finished. I need to close the loop here. It was really hard for me to leave projects open until we had the finances to get them done. So I wanted them done in real time. And that also was partly what, you know, added to the credit card debt. So I think that's tip number one, is be willing to take your time with the project, do the financial planning, get the numbers, always get multiple bids, no less than 3 bids per project. Certainly we DIY'd a lot of it, but that took me a long time. The second house, I was better. The third house, we were never in credit card debt. The second house, maybe for the first year, but I did much, like much better.
I think it was just at the beginning when we had all the big projects right away, the heavy hitters right
away. Yeah. So I made progress. Again, all about imperfectly empowering progress here. And the reality is I did not do it well with the first house. Now, that being said, we did still profit significantly on the first house. Maybe not as much had I been more patient and not run up the interest on our credit card. But really quick, I wrote this out for you so people understand like what is the benefit? How do the numbers actually break down when you buy these houses and then roll them over? And what is the benefit to it? So we bought the Victorian for $130,000, right, Zach? I think it was $130,000. That's crazy. Can you imagine right now in this market?
Nowadays, you can get like a garage for that.
That is crazy, actually. I'm now just thinking about that. That's insane. Yeah, we bought this, including the basement. It would have been 3,000 square feet.
It was pretty rundown, though.
It was rundown, but still $130,000. Anyway, we bought it for $130,000. We sold it for $225,000. These are estimated numbers. It's obviously been a long time, but these are the numbers that we had roughly.
Those are right.
No, those two numbers, but what I'm about to say, we invested approximately $50,000. We profited $45,000. So you have to remember when you look at those numbers, so that's the difference, right? That's $95,000. That's the difference between buying it for $130,000 and then selling it for $225,000. So that difference is $95,000. We put into the house $50,000.
Between projects and selling.
Oh, we did so much in that house
and things like
that. Oh, we did so much in the house. I mean, the heating, there was so much. We converted tons of stuff in that house. So, but we profited $45,000. However, we were cut a check for like $120,000. So you have to remember we put 20% down. So when you actually then go to closing, we were given a check for $120,000. But here's where that money then goes to. $50,000 then went to the next house, our second fixer-upper. So we rolled $50,000 of that
That was the down payment. It took more than that for projects and things like that.
Right. So we took $50,000 of that for the 20% down. Because Zach, tell everyone, why do you want 20% down on a house? I'm not going to assume people know this. Why do you want 20% down?
You don't have to pay mortgage insurance then. So the mortgage companies, and to protect themselves when they have certain percentage of investment in a house, they actually charge an insurance, an extra cost every month until you get it, have paid off a certain percent.
It basically protects them. So we did 20% down with every house. So we immediately took $50,000 and put it into the 20% down payment for the second fixer upper. Specifically how we did that, we did a bridge loan. The bridge loan enabled us to take the $50,000 out of our house prior to actually selling it. The interest, the extra costs were incredibly minimal to be able to capitalize on this second house that we really wanted. It was an incredible buy. It was a foreclosure. The basement flooded when we went through it. We were like, we want this house. We're so strange. Most people are like, the basement flooded and you bid higher for it? We were like, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, basically what happened is the basement flooded. Superior wall system meant no water could get out. It's a great like advertisement for the Superior wall system. However, the basement Superior wall system is actually meant to not let water in, but it also didn't let water out. A pipe broke in this foreclosure, flooded the house. It was like Titanic in the basement there. And then the bank, because it was bank owned, it was a foreclosure, paid to have the entire basement, 1,000 square feet, sanitized. Brand new, oh my gosh, what was it, Zach? Brand new furnace, electric panel.
Furnace, water heater, electric panel, and then they gutted it down to the walls and like cleaned and sanitized everything. Yeah. So we had a blank slate and new mechanicals.
Yep. So we basically bid $5,000 more than what they were asking, because you know full well all of that was worth well over $5,000, and we got it. So anyways, we jumped on that. It was definitely worth the little bit of interest in a bridge loan between the first and second houses. But for those of you wanting to know logistics, that's how we did it. So then $50,000 went to the 20% down on that foreclosure. But here's what else that we did. We wiped out all car debt with that first check that we were cut. We only had two kids at this point, but that was the first thing that we did, is we wiped out car debt first, because car debt is just dead money. I mean, you can't write anything off for taxes. There's no investment opportunity. So I don't exactly remember how much we actually put into wiping out car debt. And then we put some to, Zach had a little bit of college debt.
I started undergrad.
Yeah, undergrad.
Been mostly paid for, but I had some undergrad debt.
Yeah. I think we wiped out a fair portion of your undergrad debt. And then left a tiny bit for renovations. So you think about all those numbers. We actually put next to nothing in savings. Like looking at our bank account at that time, like you'd have been like, wait, where did it all go? But here's the thing. We paid out all this debt and all the interest we would have paid on the debt. So it was a long-term investment. So that was our second house. That was 1 to 2. The second house we bought for $220,000, sold for $320,000. We profited, this was actually the one we profited the least on. We profited $40,000 and again, got a check. Again, remember, you know, the check that you're actually cut is also including the 20% that you put into it and whatever you paid off while you lived there. So then again, same thing. We rolled this money into 20% into the third fixer-upper. Unfortunately, in this time, we needed to buy a van. That really isn't unfortunate. I said that wrong. We had Lily, which is by no means unfortunate. She is the cutest little bundle you've ever seen. She is an adventure and we love her for it. She came in that second house. And so we had to buy a van and upgrade since we had three kids. So a large chunk of that again went to wiping out our van debt. And I have been asked before, like, do you wish you would put more into savings? And again, if you actually break down the numbers don't lie. The amount of money that we have saved in paying off car debt alone is thousands.
Yeah, I don't think we've made an interest payment on a car since the first house. I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't think so either. So that's thousands and thousands of dollars. I would argue we could not have made the money by saving that we would have by saving the debt, if that makes sense. So paying off car debt is always, always a win. We wiped out all of Zach's college debt selling the second house and put a portion of it to the only student debt that I had left was from my second master's, because apparently I just couldn't stop going to school. So I have two masters. Zach's actually wrapping up his second master's as well, but all of his are paid for. Second one's done. That's true. You're just almost done with classes.
Still taking another cert.
Yeah. For those of you who are teachers, put it this way. He's M plus 60 already. He's been pounding out school. So anyways, bottom line, wiped out all of Zach's college debt, selling the second one, put a portion of it to my second master's. And again, put very little in savings. Again, we're just like consolidating debt with the sale of every house. 20% into the third fixer-upper, the one that we just sold. Talk about a seller's market. We bought this house for $209, this third one, and sold it for $360. I'll let you do the math there. But so the bottom, so much math.
Didn't want to do that in the fly.
No, I didn't. And I did not write it down. I'm not doing it on the fly. We actually invested the least into the third one. And thanks to the seller's market, profited the most. That money, we'll talk about this in a little bit. The thought process into what we were going to do next, we wrestled with it a lot. Zach and I probably had the biggest fight of our marriage having this discussion. And it just, God worked in amazing ways. But the bottom line is we rolled the profit into a CD. People have asked me, like, you know, did you do an investment? Or we had really good advice from our financial advisor that because we could need it in 3 months, we could need it in a year. We just don't know when we'll find the property that we want. So a CD was guaranteed interest, guaranteed growth. And in theory, you're not getting penalized as long as it's in for at least 3 months. So it is in a CD. And then, of course, our adoption. And now we're just saving, saving, saving. And we have next to no debt except for a little bit left on my second master's, which at this moment I am choosing. We have a short-term goal we are ready to accomplish. I'm leaving that little bit sit because we want as much as we can for when the property comes up so that we are ready. We will talk about that in a second, but let's address what has been the most challenging aspect of fixing up houses. This was asked by several people. Zach?
Hi, Denise Hamilton Mace here, host of the Low No Drinker podcast, your place to go to meet the people and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. Every week, I speak to brand founders like Carl Anthony Brown from CrossFit Non-Alcoholic Spirits and ex-MasterChef finalist Billy Wright from Descent 10% Gin. Industry experts like Hamish Renton in our chat about how the fat jabs will impact low and no drinkers. And I help you answer questions like, what the heck is the difference between non-alcoholic and alcohol-free anyways? This podcast is for you if you're looking for a fun and informative way to explore a life less intoxicated with no judgment or expectation. Check out the link in the description or find me at lownodrinkermagazine.com.
Most challenging aspect was, I think, our different approaches to it, especially with the first house. Like
learning yours was wrong and mine was right.
Well, that's one of the things we talked about.
Just kidding.
You mentioned
hashtag marriage counseling.
You mentioned it a little bit earlier about how in your mind this was the project and it just needed to be done. And in my mind, I was going to go put in a lot of work, and whatever got done that day got done. And then I wanted to go home and I wanted to sleep. But the problem was, especially at that point when we really didn't know a whole lot about what we were doing, and it was a 140-year-old house where nothing was straight or square, projects took longer. So
you guys, to give a sense of what he's saying, when we talk about level or square, just to give you a perspective, when we installed the kitchen in the Victorian, If you're looking, so again, you guys can go to the blog and you can see all of these fixer-uppers that we're talking about. You can literally Google Victorian kitchen and you will see this kitchen that we're talking about. Looking at the kitchen from the dining, oh, I hear our children. Huh. No respect for the podcasting world. So when you look at this kitchen in the Victorian from left to right, the grade, like the slope of it was literally, it was inches different. Do you remember how many inches it was different from left to right?
I don't remember exactly, but it was 2 inches. And then that was the skinny, because it was a long skinny kitchen. And that was the shorter distance. When Grandpa and I were putting that in, we like had a 2x4 at one point at the back just to try and get the 2x4 on the floor, not just shims. We needed more than that to try and get it level for the countertop.
Yeah, I mean, it, like literally nothing was level. And then the walls, to do any type of like crown molding or baseboards or anything, like nothing was 90 degrees.
This is where we started.
This is the first one that we started. Oh, yeah. Do your best and then caulk the rest. Said every home renovator known to mankind. Love me some caulk. I can work some magic with caulk. No lie. I can work some magic with caulk. Really, really quick hack. Let me tell you this right now. Is if you've got this massive space, you take like a shim or a piece of something as like a backboard, tack it in with a brad nailer so that there's some sort of backing in this hole. And then you basically just take your caulk gun and you go over it, let it dry, go over it again, let it dry, and it creates...
Yeah, and for example, we had to do that at the Victorian house on some of the crown molding, not in a corner any place like that, but we had to do it because it was the old horsehair plaster lath behind it. But even just in a flat run across the wall, if you were to stand underneath it, the wall waved in spots. So the flat crown molding, there were spots on the ceiling or against the wall where there was just a gap because the wall or the ceiling waved. And so we had to try and fill that. It was a learning experience.
And I feel like one of the differences too that came out for us that we had to deal with, and this is very true to our personalities, is I would look at something and be like, we can do this. Like, we can make this work. And Zach would just see it and instantly like see all of the, this is not going to work, and be like, this is not happening. This will not work. Where I would say, we'll figure it out as we go. And he wanted like all of the, you know, plan lined up. And I'm like, nah, we'll figure it out as we go. So we also had to come to some sort of balance where I would have more willingness to listen to why he didn't think it would work. And then in fairness, you also have learned to trust me. Like, it is hard because he initially had a hard time seeing what wasn't there.
That's true.
And it's really hard to know how to like put what you see in your head into words. And so sometimes for me, it just came out like, let's just do it. Where in my head, like there really was kind of a plan, but it was all visual and inside here. And I couldn't put it, you know, into like a graphic that he could understand. I think there's a lot of couples like that. What would you say to that?
No, I agree. That's definitely something I've learned, is that like when you walk in and say, well, if we take this wall out, and we move this here, and we hang this here, and we do this and finish it with this, it's going to look great. And I would go, what?
Say what? All I see is plaster falling off the wall.
But then when we would look at a project, you had that picture in your head and you said, this is what we're going to do. It's going to be great. And for me, I saw, well, that means we have to do this and we have to do this, and this job is going to be terrible and that's going to take forever and this is going to be expensive. And we found a balance between the two. There were some projects that I pushed back on a lot that didn't end up being very bad and look great. And there were some projects that we ended up doing that were a complete disaster. And I spent more time undoing them, like all of your texture.
And you're not bitter at all.
Only about that paint, only about that texture, whatever that was. That one I will be bitter.
That was the first.
I'm going to take that one to my grave.
That was also the first house.
Oh yeah. That was, you put, Anna wanted to give like a textured paint.
I just didn't want, like, it's an old Victorian house. I wanted to give this faux plaster look. I didn't want it to just be, y'all know that paint bores me. Paint alone bores me. So I need something in my life, some texture, some dimension. So I wanted to give an old world look to this house, but I had no idea what I was doing.
Well, and so she decided she would test it in a small area. And for her, the small area was the entire hallway. And she put it on, and I don't remember if it was something didn't work right or something wasn't right. So
something about the oil. It had something to do with the primer that we used. There was something with the oil and the latex. I don't even remember what the situation was.
But it cracked. It looked like, you know, like the salt flats that you see is just cracked and spidered everywhere. So
Pictures of it are on the blog if you Google the living room in the Victorian. Yeah.
And so after she put that up, I then spent several days scraping it all off. Not like the one small, like 3 foot by 3 foot test area you would do to make sure it worked. No, the entire hallway. And so she did that. And then we did some research and thought we figured out, put down a different base layer. And so she said, well, I'll do it again. And went to a different spot that was slightly smaller, the front wall by the front door. And it cut, cracked, and did that all again. So for the second time, I had to spend days scraping that all off by hand, tiny little chunk at a time.
My
now
man.
Now you understand why I'm taking that to my grave.
It's so funny because I asked him like, what was the worst? And that was not the one I thought he was going to say of all of the terrible projects. So you really do have some bitterness. You might need some therapy for that one. The fact that you've held on to that one, that's not what I thought you were going to say. We've had some terrible projects.
There's other projects that are just dirty and not fun, but had to be done or... You know, there's no other way around it, or we just saved thousands of dollars by doing it ourselves. But that one was one that...
So unnecessary is that's what irritated you about it.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all-natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual-certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy, and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program, but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
Well, we are back. Wardrobe change, shocker. For whatever reason, we lost power during that interview. So here we are. On a positive note, I'm having a much better hair day today. So we're counting our many blessings. We were talking about the most challenging aspect of fixing up houses. And Zach had been talking about the idea of communicating, and it took us a little while to learn how to take our personalities and then communicate them a little bit better in terms of projects and expectations, etc. We talked about finances being a challenge. I mentioned some of that. And certainly time was a challenging aspect as well. The other thing I had written down to answer this question was also just lack of knowledge and resources. We had a lot of help on the first one with family, but tools, just knowing what tools we needed. We did the most ridiculous projects with the wrong tools. We've talked about this before. A while ago, we did an Instagram interview and we talked about it. But bottom line, one of the most memorable ones is we tried to install crown molding in this Victorian with a circular saw. No lie, Zach, our marriage may or may not have been on the brink of disaster after that project, but it did get done and I used my caulking magic. So let's talk about the more positive aspects. Another question, what was the most rewarding project or the project that you were most proud of? We've also mentioned this before too, but I like talking about the happy things, the things that we were proud of. Zach, what's the project you're most proud of all of our houses?
Probably just the each of the basements in the last two houses that we did, because it was a blank slate, something that the house, a living area the house didn't have, and we were able to turn it into some pretty cool places to hang out, to hosts, to watch TV, whatever it would be. Yeah, those two basements turned out really well.
And I have to give Zach credit with the, I still remember this because it was like light bulb, such a great idea. In our second house, the basement that we redid, I remember when we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do underneath the stairs. And I had this plan of creating a bar sink across from the 8-foot island that we built with the most amazing cabinetry company, Lillian Cabinets. Throw them out there. They're a wholesaler. I've used them many times. Lillian Cabinets, absolutely amazing. I'll make sure the link is in the description or the show notes. You can see tons of pictures from our kitchens that I used Lillian Cabinetry. 60% less. Anyway, they're amazing. I'll do a whole different podcast on Lillian Cabinets. But underneath the stairs of the second fixer-upper basement, I wanted to put a bar sink. And Zach said, why don't you, instead of doing the typical 2 feet, why don't we actually make the countertop go the whole way to the back? Because for those of you that don't know, stairs are more like 32 to 36 inches wide. So what was really cool is that enabled me then, I did that stone backdrop and it gave a really cool dimension in the basement. But pushing it the whole way back to the wall was this guy's idea. So kudos.
Every once in a while, I have a good idea.
Yeah, he does. It's true. It is true. We've learned to listen to each other. So mine is, not shockingly, my kitchens. The first house actually is still probably the one I'm the most proud of because I had never done anything like it before. I mean, when I look back and I think I really didn't botch that first kitchen design, considering I had never designed a kitchen before, I actually felt pretty proud of myself. And it was actually what sold the house as well. Kind of the crowning glory, I would say, of that first fixer upper. So that was really, I think, what I was most proud of. My very favorite room, though, just aesthetically speaking, without a doubt, is the view of the breakfast nook of our third house, the one that we just sold. And the brick that we did there with the reclaimed Douglas fir wood table that I designed, which has its own story to it. But anyway, I really, really loved the look there. So that's probably the overall room that I'm most proud of in terms of the aesthetic look.
That was another one of my ideas.
What's that?
So that was another one of my ideas, getting the brick to go step down.
Yeah, well, that one kind of came. Yeah, you did mention that. That was something we had both noticed, I think, coincidentally.
I think I just didn't want to do another wall of brick by that point.
No, well, it was some. I remember that because it was something that we were both noticing at the same time when we were installing the brick. It was naturally going in a like descending stepwise pattern. And kind of at the same time, we were both looking at being like, oh, I really like that. And then you were mentioning, well, we could just leave it like that. So it was kind of one of those coincidental, oh, less brick that we have to install. And it gave, again, a really nice dimension to the room. So basements, kitchens, I guess those are kind of our specialty now at this point. Where I had the question, where do you get your design ideas from then versus now, if it has changed? My brain, really. And ironically, I actually probably scour Pinterest now more for ideas than I did for any of our three house renovations. I didn't have any social media when we did our first house. Zero. I had no idea what Pinterest even involved. I knew it was a thing, but I had never been on it. And I didn't have any social media at all, including Pinterest, until we were done renovating the second house. So truly and honestly, the ideas just come from my brain, for good or for bad. I will own them both. Now, actually, in terms of building a house, I have gotten more ideas from other sources than I ever have. And Pinterest is one. I also, I know my style. I love the French country style. I'm looking right now at a shelf where I have probably 24 books on the French country style, some written by French authors of homes. I have flagged so many pages because I really want an authentic French country look, despite the fact that it'll be a new build. So books and Pinterest for when we build. The previous three, my own brain. Zach's answer. It literally says on our cheat sheet here, from Anna.
Either from Anna or a design idea, because I think it will take less work than the original idea. Trying to be efficient. So,
from my brain or Zach's efficient brain. Another question we got, how do you do it all with kids? This is a really, really good question. And I have had this conversation multiple times over the last 10 years with peers, with friends, because people have a really hard time moving forward with projects when they feel like, well, I need to have something to do for my kids. I've heard this so many times. I can't even tell you how many times I've heard this. And truthfully, you just need to learn how to do projects with your kids. I mean, I was using power tools with a newborn around. And that sounds like eyebrows raised, don't make any calls yet, because you can safely do it. You have to have the right setup in place. And you know, for example, with really young kids actually who aren't mobile, it's easier, right? You can strap them in, make sure that they are safe. That's actually a little bit easier. And then you move them in their little rocker to wherever you need them to go. Actually, the hardest age is the crawling age. I would argue the crawling to when they're first walking. That we had to be a lot more careful about what we were doing. We still did projects. The difference is we timed power tool use, for example, especially if there was sharp blades involved, or painting, to when that child was either not in the room, one of us was in a different room with them. Sometimes we got babysitting. In that first house, we had a lot of help. We were living with my parents, and we only had Gracie for the majority of the renovations. But for the next two houses, we did the bulk of that with them with us. As they got older, we were really, really intentional about teaching them what the tools were for, how you use them, what you absolutely did not touch. I mean, I don't believe in luck, so I'm not going to knock on wood, but we've not had one injury, which is truly shocking for either of us, for any of us.
It's more shocking that I haven't hurt myself, but...
Yeah. I mean, it really is kind of amazing that we have not had a significant injury considering the boards and the nails and just the amount of chaos. Well,
I was really careful because I knew that if I cut myself, that you had a suture kit at home, but nothing to numb it with. So you would have just told me to like bite a belt and stitch it up. And no, thank you.
Why run into the ER when I can do it here? That was one of the things I was really good at. Yeah.
I did not want to be a patient.
That's actually probably one of the only things I miss about the ER. I really loved suturing.
That's a little weird.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I loved procedures. I love suturing. Anyway, he's absolutely right. Suck it up. Yeah. Zach mentioned some of the other things that we would do. We always unplug. Well, Zach was better at this than me, actually. Always unplugging, like miter saws, circular saws.
Things always got unplugged. The safety always got put on or it got set out of reach. You know, locking a blade down or taking it out of like a jigsaw or a chop saw. But then as far as working with kids, I can remember plenty of times giving a container of fasteners of some sort to one of the kids. And their job was to hand it to me. And yeah, it might slow down a little bit because I could just go grab a handful myself. But at this point, they were working with me. They just hand me one when I needed it or to hand me the tools. At one point, I know we bought, or somebody else bought for our kids, like the little play tool set.
Yep.
And so they have their little drill and sit there going into the whatever project I was working on, or a little saw that they'd go against it. So they'd work with me. And I enjoyed that.
Yeah. And again, I think it's creating age-appropriate ways for them to be involved. The biggest downside, and I think this is what makes a lot of people pause and they keep putting off and procrastinating their project because they don't feel like they can do it with their kids around, is it slows you down. Mm-hmm. It slows you down. But in my mind, here's the thing. Practically speaking, you look at the time standpoint, okay, it slows you down, but you get it done versus you don't get it done for a crazy amount of time simply because you don't feel like doing it with kids. So I guess you have to weigh the pros and the cons, but the reality is start teaching your kids how to be around power tools, how to be around mess and projects and involve them. There's so many benefits to being able to do stuff with your kids. There's teaching moments. I still remember our third fixer-upper. We had this whole wall that we needed to knock down. And this was like the whole family was involved. We had all the kids with us. And we gave Gracie a hammer and we said, go at it. And she would have been age appropriate. She would have been what, I think?
Seven.
It was 3 years ago. So yeah, probably around seven. And she hit her finger. It's like the only time I can actually remember a kid really hitting their finger with a hammer even. And I remember she had her tears. We wrapped it in a Band-Aid and she said, Mommy, I want to keep going. Yeah. Like something so simple, but it was that whole concept speaking into, get it, girl. Like you hit your finger, that hurt. You learned your lesson, how not to hold it and keep going. Caleb, I think we gave a hammer for all of 1 minute before we confiscated it. Not quite as ready for tools at that age. Education, empowering them to understand the process, to be involved, making sure it's age appropriate, not being afraid of the mess, not being afraid of the messy process. We let our kids paint. So paint gets on them. Make sure they're wearing paint clothes. No big deal. Paint gets all over their face. You just take it off, you know, with a paint remover. It won't kill them. But it allows them to be part of the process and allows you to get the job done. Any other tips, Zach, like practical things that I'm not thinking of?
I think we covered a lot of them. It's getting them involved in whatever way they can, even if it's just holding a screw.
And to be clear, depending on the age, we did put a show on for them. We distracted them with shows. If they were not able to be involved in a safe manner, we absolutely did distract them with shows. You do what you need to do, but just get it done. Just start it and get it done. Don't use your kids being around as an excuse to not get it done. We kind of addressed this already. I had somebody ask, what is a mistake you made throughout your house flipping journey? We've chatted about that, kind of many mistakes that we've made, the finances, the using the wrong tools, communication. Do you plan to continue doing this? And would you consider becoming the next flipping reality TV show? I actually have been asked that more than you would think. I can still remember I had a physician coworker. Every time she saw me, every time I consulted her and she'd come down and she'd be like, ah, it's the future, Joanna Gaines. I'm like, oh, Lord, that sounds so stressful. My life looks so stressful. They're amazing, but oh, man. We have considered a degree of what we're doing in various shapes and forms many, many times. I mean, how many times, Zach, have we talked about, do we do this full time? Like, do we go into flipping houses, like buying up homes and flipping and selling? I also want to clarify something really quick. We did not flip homes. This is kind of getting into semantics, but we renovated the homes we lived in. It is different. A true house flipper, you buy it, you are putting in budget. Everything is budget and as simple as possible while still maintaining quality and inspections, passing all of that. But then you want to get rid of it right away. If that is actually what you're doing and you're flipping, it's very different than what we did. We renovated while we lived and we were not technically flipping, but they were
investment homes, but it's just a difference in time, the time scale and some of the decisions you make in the projects you do as well.
For sure. Again, flipping as a job looks very different than what we did. Like to truly flip a house, I would not put in nearly the amount of very, very, you know, minute detail that I was putting into the three homes that we lived in. So just to be clear, those are two different things. We've also considered being landlords, like getting into the rental business. There's so many options to buy like a fixer-upper house. And then you put some sweat equity into it and maybe 10 grand. And then you get it reappraised, you get money out of it. Then you put it on the market as a rental. I mean, there's so many incredible ways to leverage this world and do really, really well. But we have decided after this third house, and it took us a long time to figure out what our next steps were going to be after this house. But we decided we want to focus on actually fulfilling our dreams and what we have been working toward for the last 10 years. At some point, you have to like set aside we can make more money doing this. So why wouldn't we? And at some point, you just have to invest in your dream. Even if it is not like the most financially profitable thing to do. At some point, you have to live, right? Not just work. Zach's smiling. I'm preaching to the choir here. The choir being me.
I have nothing to say to that one.
Smart man. So anyway, all that to say, for right now, no. Our goal is to work on our own individual goals that we have professionally. But from the house standpoint, we are in this rental, which is like living in our own storage unit. The house is lovely, but we're basically living amongst all of our stuff crammed in any corner we can find and waiting for property to build on. That is our next priority. After that, we will see, but I will have my hands full. So that leads into the next question. When are you going to build? I've also had several people ask, are you going to contract the build yourself, or how are you approaching the house build? So there's a lot of different options is the bottom line. We are willing to buy a property with a house on it and then deconstruct the house and build on top of it. So basically totally renovate the existing house on the property. If we happen to find raw land that we can build on, that's probably the ideal scenario, but we're just playing it by ear, one step at a time. But we have seen God work in really amazing ways through this like fun house journey that has been become a huge part of our story that was really just kind of meant as a side hustle. And I just want to share this one story quick as an example of how, one, Jesus is real and he works in our life and he hears our prayers. Hallelujah and amen. But just how the impossible really is possible when you believe that there is a sovereign, divine Lord of the universe, and also that we are human. And don't be fooled by social media. Zach and I also fight and don't have the perfect relationship. So real quick, I just want to end with this because I find it highly encouraging and it's also real life. But we sat and had multiple discussions about what to do after our third house. The seller's market was going crazy and we knew we didn't want to stay in this house. This was an investment. And so we were trying to figure out, do we sell and capitalize on the fact that we sell it? If we do sell it, do we rent? Do we buy a rental, fix up a rental, rent from ourselves, and then rent that out once we find property? Anyway, Zach, talk a little bit about the different discussions and what that looked like, figuring out what we were going to do next.
Yeah, like you alluded to, there were a number of different paths we could take. Was moving right into a forever property if it came up. I think your dad wanted us to move back in with them just so we could have the grandkids in the house again.
That was probably brought up as an option.
I think he brought that up. What made the most sense financially to be responsible there, but also not wanting to kind of start another crazy flip again. Yeah, just trying to balance all of those things while still working towards our more short-term goal of building. I mean, you and I didn't see eye to eye at first.
And it's like everything. I mean, we talk about this so many times. Like, we're fighting about this. And then as like the argument continues and the conversation unravels, you realize what you're really arguing about is this. Like things that have been going on for a long time, that all your fights end up being about this, but this is what brought it up type of a thing. So it's like, I don't know, how many arguments do we have to have before we're like, you know what? We're saying the same thing, basically. Slash, yeah, we can have more conversations about this at another time type of a thing when we're not arguing about the same thing over and over again. But eventually we did come to an agreement that we were going to do a rental. It made sense. We met the financial advisor. We wanted to rent a house. But here was the problem. We wanted different things. And this is where we would get like real caught up in the details. Because for me, it was like, I don't care if I have a big backyard. It's temporary. It's a rental. I want the space inside the house where we live. Zach felt really strongly. He wanted a backyard that he could be doing stuff with the kids. Gracie and Caleb were desperate to stay at the current school that they were in. And so it kind of got to the point where I was like, you know what? We need to pray. Because one, I have not seen a rental in our town, but for this particular school in like 6 months. Not to mention one that has a yard, one that has a house big enough that I won't go absolutely insane in. And anyway, so I started encouraging Gracie and Caleb, but Gracie especially, she's a little bit older. On Wednesdays when I would pick my kids up from school and I would go to pick up Lily, our youngest, at my mom's house. It was like a 15-minute drive. And so we got into the habit of praying and talking to Jesus just about things that they were struggling with at school or, you know, things that I was praying about. And I said, let's start praying specifically that God provides our dream rental So Grace was praying these really specific things. We want a yard. We want a big enough house that mommy doesn't go crazy. I want to stay at my school. And then one day, this is kind of funny, Gracie came back and she's like, I love my neighbors. I don't want to move out of our neighborhood. And I'm like, bring it to Jesus. I'm like, I'm really putting a fleece blanket out here, Lord, but it'd be so amazing if you would speak to my daughter's heart in this way and just show her how much you care and you hear her and you're real. And we will give you all the glory for it, which is what I'm trying to do right now. Because lo and behold, it was not too much longer later when we miraculously made this discovery with the family from church. They had a house they were considering putting up for rent. Not only was it in our neighborhood, it has a backyard probably bigger than the one that we had before. The house also actually was bigger than the one that we had before. And the timing worked out absolutely perfectly. We were able to start the week before our house actually sold and we closed. We are so grateful for our landlords and they've now become friends. Anyway, listen, the impossible is possible when you believe that there is a divine God who cares about your story and is actively wanting to be a part of your life. So it was really, really sweet. Now Gracie's asking Jesus for everything. She's like, I want this, I want this. And it's not quite the way that it works. But anyway, the bottom line is we are trusting that he will continue to write this story. We are excited for the next steps. We are incredibly grateful. We've made a lot of mistakes, but we've learned from them. We made progress through the years, and I'm sure we'll make mistakes in the building process as well. To answer the question, are we contracting it out ourselves or are we hiring? Again, as is typical, it's not all or nothing. My plan, my hope, I have a builder in mind. I've not officially met with him yet, so I won't throw out the names, but they've been recommended to us by some of our favorite contractors that we've used. The plan is to basically pay somebody to do everything from breaking ground to dried in, meaning I would take over once like the drywall is up, the plumbing has all been roughed in, electric has been run, and then take over the contracting from there. Basically all the finishing stuff, like installing the cabinets and the trim and stuff that we're very, very comfortable with. And I've worked with a lot of people and would probably be able to save thousands of dollars. Not to mention so much fun material for hammers and hugs. Right? Zach's shaking his head. Right? Babe, aren't you excited about that?
I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. He's thrilled. Actually, we really can't wait. We're very, very excited. The property has been a dream of ours for many years. So that's priority number one. What did I miss, Zach?
It was perfect.
It was perfectly imperfect. That's us. Well, babe, thanks for doing this Q&A with me. If you guys have any other questions, feel free to drop them in the comments. You can certainly message me if you have any questions, but just get ready. We will be so excited when that property comes and there will be lots of fun material coming on its way. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters and you are loved.